503, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good start to your week. Good stuff from TD, as always. By the way, Smashville Live this Wednesday night from 7 until 8 o'clock. We'll be over in East Nashville, Boom Boz Craft Pizza and Tap House, where a lot of our coverage was yesterday, this post-game. Willie D and Derek Mason yesterday. That's at 1003 Russell Street. And the show will be from 7 until 8 o'clock. This week's guest, the Grim Reaper.
Stewie.
Stu Grimson in the house.
That'll be fun.
Will he be signing books?
Probably. He's all about the books.
He is all about the books. So that'll be a fun show. So if you're in East Nashville, get out there Wednesday night from 7 until 8 o'clock. Smashville Live. Every week is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine. And by the way, we had a great time at Cool Springs Red Spirits and Wine, or Cool Springs Wine and Spirits on Friday.
Yeah, I heard it was good. I'm sad I missed it.
It was a lot of fun. A lot of people stopped by. We gave some Predators tickets away. The foot traffic in there for 4 hours while we were there was incredible. So,
very cool.
It was a lot of fun, so we appreciate being at
Cool Springs. Well, I'm going to head over to the facility and do the locker clean-out thing, so I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Always a tough day.
Always.
Kind of the locker clean-out. Let's head east. Let's find out what the vibe was like in Knoxville. Vince Ferrara joins us every Monday at high noon. He's with WNML, the sports animal there in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. What was the Titans viewing party or parties like in your neck of the woods yesterday?
It was good. I knew of the one that I was at, and that was at a kind of a all-encompassing entertainment place called Main Event, where they have bowling, you know, it's a great kids and party type area, video games and a restaurant and, you know, bar and all that kind of fun stuff. So it's a massive place in Knoxville. It's been around for a couple of years, but you know, it was pretty packed. I didn't really see any empty tables, and you know, a lot of bowling area was all packed, where all the screens at the end of each lane had the game on. Every TV was on that AFC Championship game. A bunch of people in Titans gear, so it was fun. You know, great eruption when you know Titans would make a good play. So you know, it was neat. There's a perception that some have that, you know, the Titans don't have a big fan base here. I beg to differ. They just, you know, haven't always been vocal or outward because of, you know, the franchise until this year having so much inconsistency. But it was a very good turnout. And I know the local TV station, the CBS station, WBLT, they partnered with us at the Sports Animal, and they were ecstatic to have the crowd. They kind of put it together just during the week, and they were ecstatic at the turnout. It was fun. I was very impressed that many Titans fans came out to support the Titans.
You're right about that, though, Vince, because we've talked about it. There is that narrative out there. There are people that believe that, you know, folks in Knoxville don't care what's going on in Nashville, and that you could say the same about the Predators, but we remember talking to you and talking on this show about the numbers we saw. The numbers came in, and Knoxville was absolutely paying attention to the Predators' run to the Stanley Cup Final 3 years ago.
Yeah, and remember we talked about how Market Square in downtown Knoxville, they had a massive screen out there and had hundreds and hundreds of people camped out there bringing their lawn chairs and enjoying the games on the big screen out there. So, yeah, that narrative that fans don't follow don't follow the Nashville sports, that's just not accurate. Are there people that of other fan bases? Sure, there are. But when things are going well and you present a winning product, you're going to get support. Whether some call it bandwagon or some call it just something to an opportunity to root for them on the bigger stages, whichever it is, you'll take it and it's there.
You always follow the former Vols that are in the NFL. Well, there's just one game left, two teams standing. Any former Vols on those rosters?
Yeah, there's one on each side with the Chiefs and the 49ers. Dustin Colquitt, longtime punter of the Kansas City Chiefs, will be on one side. And then Emmanuel Mosley, who is really had a fantastic season. He got hurt early on last year and didn't really get to play much of a factor for the 49ers, but he's got a chance to play a lot at corner. A fellow Witherspoon last week, he struggled in the 49ers game early in that divisional round. Then Emmanuel Mosley came in and played really well, and he had an opportunity to play a lot yesterday and played well, and then had that interception of Aaron Rodgers, the second pick of the season. So he'll be on the other side. So this will be the 11th consecutive season that a Tennessee player will be on the Super Bowl champion. It's, you know, considering how things have not gone well for the University of Tennessee over an extended period of time, as we've, you know, talked about and documented before, there's players that have had success, and obviously that streak, 11 straight years, is pretty impressive. And Emmanuel Mosley, much maligned at Tennessee, you know, as a Butch Jones player, and gave up, you know, a lot of pass plays, and the fans were on him hard. But, you know, another guy that, you know, in a situation on the highest level, getting great coaching, and is showing what he can do. So it's they'll be a champion, a former Tennessee player. They'll be a champion come 2 weeks.
Can you explain this kid, Tennessee? The story of this kid, Tennessee, was recruiting, and he had signed at Auburn, and they were still recruiting him. And I know National Signing Day is just around the corner, but this is going back to the early signing period. What clear up that story. I need to hear more on this.
Yeah, it is interesting, and it's kind of a sign of the times with the current rules and that early signing period. So Jay Hardy is a guy that at one time was committed to Tennessee and then ended up committing to Auburn before the early signing period. But he didn't sign in the early signing period. So that was viewed as a win for Tennessee, that they got him to wait, therefore they can continue to recruit him. That's something that happens a lot. And if guys are, if you're trying to convince someone to come to your school that's headed somewhere else, getting him to wait and do more visits and all that is usually a win. So that appeared to be the case for Tennessee. So they're out at his basketball game. And they had Jeremy Pruitt and I think two assistants that were there too. They're watching his basketball game and spending time on the recruiting him. And so as it turns out, he actually signed with Auburn, but didn't tell Tennessee that he signed with Auburn. So Tennessee was under the impression that he was committed but not signed, so that's why they continued to recruit him. But he actually did sign and didn't want to make it public, I guess maybe so he could continue to be recruited. I don't know.
So you're saying Auburn never reported that he had signed with them?
No, because I think he wanted to keep it quiet or make some sort of announcement perhaps. You know, guys do that for the All-Star games. Washington, the five-star tight end that signed with Georgia, he signed with Georgia in the early signing period, but he wanted to make his announcement at the All-Star game that he played in. So schools kind of work with kids sometimes if they want to make that big announcement. But, you know, apparently Jay Hardy didn't tell Tennessee that he had signed. And so Auburn had to come out and finally say, yeah, he actually is signed with us. Now, there's a database where you can find out where players have signed. And apparently Tennessee did check that list, but he was added after Tennessee had looked at the list. So I guess the timing was just off. That's my understanding of how that worked. You know, obviously, you know, the kids want to do their own kind of deal sometimes to you know, to make an announcement, but it seems like Tennessee, you know, from a timing standpoint and from not getting that info from the kid directly, that's why they continue to recruit him. So, you know, just kind of one of those deals with the early signing period that happens when guys can sign but not make it public if the kid wants to wait to announce it.
What a strange story. Vince, good stuff. Yeah. Tennessee was in town yesterday or 2 days ago at Memorial Gym. We'll get into a little bit on the basketball side of things. More with Vince Ferrara from WNML in Knoxville. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Vince Ferrara on the line with us, WNML in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Give him a follow. He's got good stuff, as always. Willie?
Well, Vince, I'm still in mourning a little bit. Not that I ever – I don't. People were asking me this. I don't think I ever had a game where I was the first guy to hit a three to, quote, continue the streak. In my 3 years, there were a few games where I hit a first half three, but I don't think I ever hit the first three. It was never something we even thought about. But
so you've played no part in keeping the streak alive until
I don't think so. I don't think I ever was the guy that kept it going. But it never got close in any of the games that I played in. It's never like we got late into a second half needing a three when I was in there. But it was something that I really do believe. And I saw a lot of people on Twitter from different eras mention something like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this is over. So, Vince, your perspective on the 0 for 25 that stopped something that was very unique to Vanderbilt.
Well, Willie, if you'll allow me, let me throw a question back at you first, and then I'll answer your question. Were you okay with the booing of Vanderbilt when they drive the lane to the basket rather than jacking up threes to keep the streak alive?
I think you have to play the game the right way. That goes into the category of, because it's happened many times, when Brett Favre sort of allowed Michael Strahan to sack him, right? There's several examples in history on both sides of that, when something like that is at stake. I mean, they took 25 threes. 25 should be enough to hit one. Like, they tried. It's not like they didn't shoot it. But you have to try to play the game the right way, I think. So I didn't have a problem with that. And I can see the fans booing, too, because it's like they take a lot of pride in that. They were hoping.
They weren't going to win the game, so the next best thing is to keep the streak intact.
I don't know if it's the next best thing, but I can, from the fan standpoint, I get that for sure. I think it was Drew Maddox played on a team that it did go down to the last couple of minutes. They hit one, I think, with less than a minute to go. I don't think it was not at Memorial Gym. I forget if it was at Alabama or Florida, but they hit one because they were very aware of it. And especially a guy like Drew, who, you know, is generational with the team. You know, his dad played, his grandfather. So it was just a sad moment. It was sad. But hey, if they tried 25 threes, I don't have a problem with, you know, at the end of the day saying they tried, you know. And it should be noted that they did move the three-point line back. And so it increases, however small. I looked at the percentages on KenPom. Vince, I think three-point shooting in general, each time they've moved it back, it takes about a percentage point off of the NCAA average. So it was a little more likely to happen, but I still didn't see that coming.
Well, and that's fair enough, fair point. I know with Tennessee, it hasn't discouraged them from taking threes. I haven't with that line being pushed back. And that was the thought process, is that maybe teams wouldn't shoot as many threes. Maybe they'd play more in the mid-range and make sure, especially if they weren't making them, that they would move up and play different. Tennessee's shooting at a much lower percentage in three-pointers than they did last year. And they're on pace to take a heck of a lot more than they did last year. So I don't know about college basketball if those numbers correlate, but I don't think the game is as good this year. They're just too many. It's too devoid.
It's almost unwatchable, in my opinion.
Yeah, a number of Tennessee games have been that way, Darren, for sure. And then when you have teams like Vanderbilt and Memphis not have their best players, when you didn't have enough stars to begin with, it has hurt the game. The game is down this year, and I don't think that's really debatable. So it was an ugly game, clearly, but from Tennessee's standpoint, they did a couple things that Rick Barnes has been preaching to these guys to do. They played fast. They went to a 1-2-2 three-quarter press, and that bothered Vanderbilt. They were able to get easy baskets. At one point, Tennessee had 38 fast break points, while Vanderbilt had 38 total points in the game. And I think that was the key. Tennessee has struggled so much offensively in the half court. They don't have enough creators. They don't have enough of a regular inside game that they do not take great shots, and they have to struggle so much in the half court. So this got them some easy looks. It got them confidence. Another thing was Bowden and James. These guys weren't just settling for threes. They were driving to the lane, and they would open things up for Fulkerson and some of the other guys in Pond. So they played the best way they have a shot to win with, and that's more open court. And what's helped them is adding Viscovi and now adding Uroš Plavšić. Is now they have a little bit more depth in numbers to where they can play more full court or three-quarter court and not worry about fouls or about guys getting tired because they have more numbers now. So they play the right way. Can they sustain that? We'll see. But I think that was Tennessee imposing their will a little bit and playing their best way. And then Vanderbilt, without having their best player in Neesmith, not having enough answers in that game.
Well, yeah, they're in some serious trouble over there at the moment. But let's focus on Tennessee for a moment here. Plavšić, you mentioned him. Intriguing guy that this has been a saga behind the scenes. What this isn't fair. They finally get the good news. He's able to play. What kind of difference could he make?
I think he can help them win a couple of games. I don't think he is all SEC type of program changer. I mean, he redshirted his freshman year last year at Arizona State. So he is still a young player. These were two games into his college career, even though he looks much older. And I interviewed him for the pregame, and I've never looked up to a player when doing an interview like I did when I interviewed him. So he is all of 7'1", I think. And he's a guy with offensive skills. He doesn't have, tremendous lateral movement, and he's not necessarily a natural shot blocker because of his size, but I think he can be a defensive presence, and he has offensive skill set that Kyle Alexander at the same age didn't have for Tennessee. Now Alexander is a whole nother level of athlete and upside because he was so raw still, but I think he can help him. He gives him 5 more fouls. And then, very importantly, he allows them to slide Fulkerson and Pons to more of a natural 4 and 3 spot, to where now Pons, who's had to body up against taller, much physically thicker post players, now he can come over and do what he does best, block shots, but do it from the weak side. He's blocked a shot in every game this year, playing undersized in the post. Now he can do it instead of bodied up against those big guys. He can do it weak side. I think it just puts everyone more in a natural position for them when he's on the court, and then it gives them those fouls. So I think he will be the difference. He will be a difference in a game or two as the game goes on. But we're not talking about, all SEC caliber, at least not in his current state of his career.
Let's bring it back around to the overall product of college basketball, because you don't have a lot of the big name recognition. There are a number of injuries And, of course, you mentioned Wiseman ineligible. There are things that are working against it that, in some cases, are out of control with the injuries. But what about just for the SEC? It was really getting promising. I thought SEC basketball had some buzz going the last couple of years. It's taken a step back, and it's unfortunate. So your thoughts on the product itself, especially in a town like Knoxville, where they've had to work so hard to get the spotlight on the basketball program.
Yeah, it has. I think the league absolutely has taken a step back. And, you know, you look at some of the decisions for players, you know, players at LSU and Tennessee, you know, guys that could be, not always Kentucky, but guys that could be really impacting and being one of the best players in the league in all of college basketball are just not there anymore because of their decisions to go to the NBA. And I think at some point you got to pay the piper, and it's happened to college basketball, and it's hit the SEC hard too. There's really good coaching in this league. I mean, think about Tom Crean, Eric Musselman, Rick Barnes. I mean, some of the newer coaches in this league are fantastic. They just don't have the elite players. Obviously Edwards at Georgia would be an exception, but there's not those elite players right now in the league, and not enough of them. I mean, you know, a lot of people probably couldn't name, you know, 5-6 players perhaps in the entire league. And it's just the way it's gone, especially from outside of your home team. And I just think that it's unfortunate. Now, next year for Tennessee, I think it will change because they have 2 5-stars and a high 4-star coming in that highly rated class. So I think Tennessee fans look at it as, all right, maybe a step back this year, and then next year, no excuses. Not everyone can look at it that way. What's Georgia going to be post-Edwards? They had a top-5 recruiting class, but how many of those guys are going to make decisions to go pro, ready or not, rather than stay and develop at Georgia? I think that's where we're at right now. It's very unfortunate.
Vince, good stuff as always. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Stay warm over there.
All right, we'll try. Vince Ferrara, Sports Animal, WNML in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. More of Darren, Donnie, and Chase next.
Well, I felt like we got off to the start that we wanted in all three phases. But I think when you play teams like this, or teams that are good as the Chiefs, as explosive as they are, you kind of knew that they were going to, you know, make a run. Again, I'm not going to say that was, you know, that three and out was the difference in the game. We punted down there, and we couldn't, you know, had some stops that we didn't get. The quarterback was able to scramble on that series. And in a perfect world, yeah. Did I say, Arthur, hey, this has to be the last drive of the half? Absolutely. But that didn't happen. Doesn't mean the game was over. I felt like we still battled and competed, but that certainly was a big series for him.
Mike Vrabel's going to talk in a couple of hours today, as it's always tough. Clean out locker day. Good news is this is the latest they've done it in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
17 years in this market. They've cleaned out lockers this late. Now, the question is, as we've been talking about all day, is what does this mean?
Well,
what you want to avoid is this not being Jacksonville of 2 years ago. That's what you can't have.
And I like the direction it's going. I would like to take one moment. I love that sound clip from Mike Vrabel, because, again, it gets down to, I think, how this game will be remembered. It won't be what the Titans didn't do. It'll be more just the Chiefs were that good. They were that good. But if you're trying to go back through and say this is where they just missed the perfect first half, almost, they're up 17-7. Kansas City comes roaring down the field. They score. Okay, 17-14. You've got the lead. You've still played a heck of a half. You have the ball back with 4 minutes to go. Then this is, again, where you go back into the, well, why didn't Derrick Henry get more carries? Well, he's got, at this point in the game, with the Titans with the ball on their own 25 with 4 minutes left in the half, or 3:57. He's got 14 carries for 60 yards or 61 yards. They give it to him two times in a row. As you heard Mike Vrabel, he said, yeah, let's make sure this is the last drive in the half, right? You don't want to give the ball back to the Chiefs because the Chiefs get the ball to start the second half, too. And sure enough, they go three and out. But they went down swinging with their best guy. It's easy to second guess, but it's like they did give it to Henry, right? Give the Chiefs credit. They stacked him up on two straight plays to force third and nine. And then they tried to they went underneath to Deion Lewis. He couldn't quite get to the chains. And all of a sudden, uh-oh, you got to punt it back to him with 2 minutes to go. Then you get the break, the holding penalty. First, he gets the strange bounce, right, where they almost muffed the punt. Then they move back 10 more yards, and Kansas City's got the ball on the 14-yard line with a minute 51. And you're thinking, you're worried, but, okay, maybe you got a shot at getting a stop. But then the worst case happens, and they go down and score, and you're behind at halftime. But I still tip my hat to the Chiefs more so than I say, what happened with the Titans? You know, we're not sitting here with this list of things where early in the season, there were some games where like, man, that was just the Titans let it slip away. You know, they had a chance to win that game. They just didn't get it done. But they had their chances. This was one where like, I don't know, whatever play call you wanted to do, whatever you wanted to do different, there wasn't a whole lot of room. They squeezed everything they had out of this group. But as you said, now the picture is going to start turning towards how do they get better? How do they build off of this? How do they take advantage of the opportunity and go on to the next thing in so many ways?
Think about this.
In the stands, their whole profile, but they have to do the right things to build on.
We've got an example here. I mean, we've seen this. So we've seen how critically important it is. Think about after the Predators run to the Stanley Cup final, right? All the good that came out of that, right? We saw what happened to this market, the fan base, everything. It was all just trending up like a rocket ship. Could you imagine? And for whatever reason, I don't know what it was, injuries or whatever, that they it didn't happen the next year. The follow-up year to that was just missed the playoffs.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Think about how that would have impacted. How that would have changed things. Instead, what did they do? They came out. They were the favorite. They were the talk. Everybody was there was huge expectations. And they won the President's Trophy. They were the best team in the regular season. Right? And so it was crazy. It was a crazy hard ticket. That's all anybody wanted to talk about. It didn't work out. They lost in Game 7 in the second round. But I'm saying, what if they didn't follow up after the run to the Stanley Cup final? What if they followed up with a so-so season? How that would have changed things. And that's exactly where the Titans are. They've had this now. They didn't get to the Super Bowl, but they got to the AFC Championship game, and nobody saw this coming. And they went to Foxborough, and they beat the Patriots. And they went to Baltimore, and they beat the Ravens. They had this incredibly tough road, and they couldn't finish it off in Kansas City, but it was the AFC Championship game. They were one of four teams standing. People are back. By the way, I just looked at the TV ratings. Mark Benda from News Channel 5 put him out. It officially comes out tomorrow, but he's pretty good at looking at the data and kind of projecting what it's going to come out. I mean, he usually nails it. He says it's going to be about a 46 in this market. 46 is close, is dangerously close to Super Bowl numbers in this market. That's how big yesterday was. So they're getting people back. We know, we saw, we had, you know, our forces here on 102.5 The Game in Kansas City. We saw the parties that were going on, all the Titans fans that made the trek to KC. They made the trek to Baltimore. They made the trek to Foxborough. They made the trek to Houston. We talked to fans who went to Houston for the final regular season game and then went over to Dallas for the Winter Classic. How do you build upon that? Because it's been a while since we've really seen like this market has taken a turn, like a real turn. It was easy back in the day when they just jumped out of the gates and had their success because it was all new. It was fresh. It was new. Stadium was new. The team was new. NFL in this market was new, and that's easy. That's an easy sell. But, you know, two decades later, it's not as easy when there's been a huge drop-off. And so now there's going to be real expectations. And so now it's up to John Robinson to keep this thing going, and Mike Vrabel to equip themselves with the group that's going to take the next step, right? And maybe it's a division title. Maybe it's home playoff game or games.
I have confidence in John Robinson and Mike Vrabel with what they're looking for. They have built the roster. They've identified. They have a good team right now. They have good chemistry. They have a buy-in. They have an identity, I think. Presuming that they are able to bring back Derrick Henry, and then I think it's way more likely that it's Tannehill than the other scenario we discussed where, you know, what if they took a run at Tom Brady. What's interesting is, like, I like the nucleus that should be around for a while that they have built, right? If Henry is a part of that nucleus and you're hoping he is in his prime for another couple of years, we know how fleeting it could be or fragile it can be with running backs, but he's the horse. You know, you've got Taylor Lewan's not old, right? He should be in his prime. Rashawn Evans is just getting into his prime. He's become a really good player. Jayon Brown, a good young player. Kevin Byard, a great young player. Jeffrey Simmons, what can he be? Like, down the middle, there's a lot to like, and it's not an aging roster, right? It's a good core. That's what you have to build. But and I think they've been very good at identifying the role players who have really carved out a nice little niche. So it's a good combination in that respect. So I'm confident in their ability to take that forward. I'm not as confident in what you were talking about as the other aspect, like the business aspect, the buzz. Can they fill the stands? They ought to have something they haven't had in a long time, right? A really likable team with star players, right? They're fun to watch. They're not dull. They don't just grab. I mean, even though Derrick Henry is a rushing guy, he's exciting, right? And they hit big plays down the field. They were fun. So if they should. They
Derrick Henry is the most popular player on the team. It's not even debatable.
They should fill the stands. But are you confident they'll do that
today? Right now?
For next year? No. They should get a bump, but will it fill the stand? Like, and not. And start to do some of the things.
I didn't say
weed out the other team's fans.
I didn't say it's just do what they did before. Like, hey, we're business, open for business. Oh, sell out. Yeah. Thanks. I didn't say that. I'm saying they now have the opportunity.
They have
people
the opportunity.
Are ringing the doorbell.
Yes.
That's the difference. They're there on the doorstep. They're in the neighborhood. They're there.
Because I think it's the team, they'll have to work for it. The team has done their part. Right? They're fun to watch. Now they have to, the other people who have to make that connection, they've got to do their part, get a little innovative, and make that place a place where you got to be. It's not just, hey, I'd like maybe I'll go to the game. It's like, I got to be at the game. And it's the Titans fans. It's not the other team's fans. They got to address that as well. But they have, like you said, this is an opportunity. They've now reached a new chapter.
We'll come back and wrap up the third hour with This Is What I Know. Tell us what you know next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Just know.
I have to know.
Do you think everybody knows?
When you know, you just know. It's time to set the record straight. Join the fun on This Is What I Know with Darren, Donick, and Chase.
All right, it's TWIC time. Tell us what you know. Give you a pair of tickets to see Vol Beat with special guest Clutch and the Picture Books at Municipal Auditorium. That'll be on April 13th. 615-737-1025. 737-1025. Just very simple. It's wide open. Just tell us what you know. Unfortunately, we've talked about, I wasn't sure we would get to them. Usually we do it at 11:45. We moved it back. We had Teron in studio with us during the second hour. So we addressed a lot of This Is What I Know, but I'll just go on and repeat what I had for today. This Is What I Know. If you didn't see, Vanderbilt's three-point streak came to a close after 34 years of making at least one three-pointer in every game. 34 years. They were one of three teams that had done that. 1,080 games. It came to an end against, of all people, Tennessee. At home, on Saturday night.
Did it have to be at home?
0-25.
Did it have to be at home? That hurt.
So that only leaves UNLV and Princeton.
Yep.
As the only two schools that have still have that three-point made shot intact.
Still stings.
That's what
I'm not. I'm not over it. Can we have a moment of silence?
The fans were not happy. And I've got to be honest, Jerry Stackhouse kind of downplayed it. He's going to find out. I get it. You just got here. But it was kind of important. And I understand where he's coming from as a coach. Like, hey, I got bigger things to worry about than a three-point. You know, something that's been intact, a record intact. We're trying to win basketball games. But it was pretty important here. I think he underplayed how big it was. At least here. What does it mean? Not really much, but you know what? Like I said, it's a record that's been there for 34 years.
It just stumped something that was distinctive.
For over 1,000 games.
Yeah. A distinctive thing.
All right, what do you know?
This is what I know. It's just amazing how things can feel so differently from one night to the next in the NHL. You had about the worst feeling you could have after Thursday. And then Saturday, it looked like it's supposed to look. So what I know is Smashville can still be Smashville. And I think the best thing that I heard in that, because there's, you know, Adam Fingan wrote an article about the aura is gone. I completely understand that, right? When things aren't going well and you're not winning at home, it's hard to keep the aura, right? It's not anybody's fault, but you know, the team's got to do well. But is it gone forever? No. And I don't know what's going to happen on the other side of the break, but they showed that they can still do it. And John Hines made a great point when I was talking to him before the game. And it was, you know, it was all of us in the broadcast. He goes, what gets the crowd going? Energy plays. Energy plays get the crowd going. So what did he do? He starts Austin Watson. Austin Watson levels a guy on the first play of the game. Just crushes him to the ice. That's one play, right? Then they have another good play. If you make good energy plays, if you have enthusiasm, if you can get your thing going, that's what gets the crowd into the game. It's not necessarily everybody, you know, getting in somebody's face or, you know, the crowd, you know, it's everything that has to come together. But this is what I know. Smashville can still be Smashville. Now, what happens on the other side of the break? It's brand new, right? It's fragile. It could be gone. You can't be guaranteed anything.
Well, they certainly didn't respond well after the Christmas break, like everybody wanted it to, because they were on a roll.
They had a nice little run going there.
9 of 10 points in 5 games.
And they went 4-6-1 after between the Christmas break and this break. And we obviously have seen they've made a pretty radical change. Now, what happens on the other side? We'll see. But
about to find out.
They can still do it, right? And part of the story is going to be how well can they play at home?
No doubt.
You got to use what you have. If you play well and you make energy plays, the crowd will be there. That was a pretty darn good Smashville atmosphere.
I thought it was fun
on
Saturday night.
It was good. There weren't any empty seats. They had the whiteout. That was Smashville. It can be what it has been. But it's, you know, there's everything's got to come together, and it starts with the players, right?
As I said on Morning Drive, I said, you know, I've been asked. I get asked this, you know, a couple people have come up to me and said, hey, you know, what are you hearing from the fans? And I said, I can't speak for all the fans. Do I talk to fans at games or on social media? Sure. Run into them. Yeah. Airports. Yeah. What do they say? They're frustrated. I get it. It's like on one hand, it's a credit. On the other hand, it's a curse. The credit is this is what this team has built up, right? It's what we've talked about. They've built up winning. It's a culture. It's what people have come to expect. It's a curse or detriment because they expect to walk into the building and always see wins. But, you know, look, home wins are important. They are. People pay a lot of their hard-earned money. And I said, the other part is I think people are frustrated because they want to see the effort. I think that's why people have gravitated towards guys like Rocco Grimaldi and Victor Arvidsson. It's little guys out there on the ice. The minute they jump over the wall, they're skating around like their hair's on fire. And Joe Fan can identify to that because they work hard and they have decided to spend their hard-earned money to come see games. And is it fair to expect to always walk away with a victory? No, it's not. They're not going to win all their home games. But we all know that this patch has not been very good. It's just not been good enough at home. They've been losing way too many games at home. They've been basically a 500 team at home. And like I said, it's kind of a credit to what they've built up. There's been so much good in that building, and the atmospheres have been incredible that people have just come to expect it. And so that's the part where it's kind of a curse, where you can't really expect just because you walk into a home game that you're always going to walk out with a victory. But things have certainly got to get better at home. Look, they need to win games no matter where it is, but you'd like to see a little bit more balance of some of the success at home as opposed to right now. They've had some more of their success really on the road than at home. Is that fair?
Yeah, well, you get a sense that they have a higher ceiling than they've played. They know it. Like the players are the first to say it. You heard Pekka after the game.
No doubt.
He was the number one star. What did he say? He goes, I think he used the word terrible. He said we just haven't been.
Pekka
been,
told me in pre.
We've been terrible
I had
at home.
In the
we've got to do better. It drives them. They want it bad. Mm-hmm. They know they've got to play better. They're not sitting there going, these fans, I don't care. You know, that they want it.
Yep.
So it felt good for them to do that. They experienced that good taste in their mouth. Now they start with the Toronto Maple Leafs on the other side. 1 week from tonight?
Two of the three games coming back are not easy to close out the month. Washington and Toronto. Yikes.
A lot of work to do.
Let's go to John. John, what do you know?
Hey, what I know is I'm proud to be a local who saw this coming with the NFL. Yes, we got the team here. We got the National Predators when we had the National Knights. We had the AFL, the National Cats. We are a great sports market. But what I do know, is there enough money to get the amount of fun that we want out of the sports market? I mean, people call and get Titans tickets, and two tickets yesterday for lounge seats is $6,814 for two seats. That's $3,000 just for PSLs. Is that right? Is that fair? Who knows? But I can tell you the market is great. I hope we're not going to be Atlanta and lose the Thrashers and maybe have a mediocre team with, you know, like the Atlanta Hawks or something like that. But when you look at it, Nashville's come so far. I just hope we don't blow out. I mean, what I know is we're a great fan base, but what I also know is we're fence riders. And sometimes it's bad. It really is. Guys, thanks for taking my time.
All right. Thank you. I think today's society culture is fence riders. I mean, I just think right now, because there's so much available, people want to win. And once again, it goes back to, is it fair to expect that? No. But people gravitate to winners. You know, I think there was a time, you know, certain markets that we can use as examples where they would just show up. They always showed up no matter what, right? No matter what. Even if they booed or even if they were mad, they were going to show up today because of television. Because of all the nice things that we can go buy and have in our house and ticket price and everything was going up, up, and up, people just made the decision, like, either you're going to win or we'll just stay home. That's in all sports, I think.
Well,
and you also have to give them a reason to go.
Well, what can you control?
The presentation.
Like, you can't always control whether the team wins or not.
Right.
Right? You do your best to build a winning roster, and both – hockey and football have the salary cap. The salary cap intentionally makes it tough to win every year. So likely you're going to have cycles, hopefully more good ones than rebuilding ones. But what can you control? You can control what the fan experience is. And so, you know, I've been saying for a long time, it's time to look at the PSLs and say, you know, this is a dinosaur. It's time to start a new era here. And try to find some new fans that have made the decision, I'm not paying a PSL. I'll go game to game, and I'll figure out if I want to go, I'll go. But making a season ticket commitment, it's not worth the investment of a PSL means nothing. The PSL was built so that you could raise money to build the stadium. That has served its purpose for a long time. There's no reason to sell new PSLs. You can do something for the people that have invested in the PSLs before, give them some benefits going forward. That's just my theory, but I'm not a ticket salesman, but I know that is a barrier, like the caller just pointed out, for a lot of people.
Yep, and make it a fun place to be.
That's you can thing. Control that.
Like I said, you can control the experience. Yeah,
you can invest some of your own money to do that. You don't have to, you know.
Yep.
Spend money to make money.
Trevor in Milwaukee. Trevor, what do you know?
I know three things. I know the delay of game penalty loophole is going to be changed by next year. I know that my Green Bay Packers missed their plane to San Francisco. And I know that Austin Watson was put on the first line because he is going to be made as trade bait.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you, Trevor. Appreciate it as always.
Have a good one, guys.
I am curious to see what's in store for David Poyle and the Predators. We're still a ways away from the trading deadline, but what happens?
It's going to get interesting.
Yeah.
On the other side, especially if Colton Sissons comes back healthy, which they expect he will, with Colin Blackwell playing the way he is, with Yakov Trenin playing, they have some depth. They have some. It's a little crowded if everybody's healthy at forward. And so they're going to have to take a look at that. Now, injuries could have that depth coming in very handy, but I think there will be some taking a look at that. And I'm not saying it's buyers or sellers. It's going to be a little different. It could be hockey trades kind of stuff that they think about, you know, more so than maybe some years past where it's, we got to add. We want this. It might be a little
going
tweaked.
For it mentality.
Yeah.
It'd be different. Yeah. All right. We'll come back. Fourth and final hour of Darren Dunnick and Chase next.